Do you have friends who own lions or tigers?
they make me feel uncomfortable because they have become a stereotype.
Tell me from your eyes how UAE has changed since your childhood.
Dubai has changed in the sense that there are new neighborhoods that are being developed because the existing neighborhoods are getting overcrowded.
Do you find some similarities between Indian food and Arab food?
A lot.
Have you had galati kebab?
Yes, I love galati kebab.
I feel all of y'all in your core are very loving. Like there's a lot of love and like niceness.
This is how we are as Emiratis. This is our culture. And when you see it being done by your leaders, it just re-emphasizes those values and those norms and makes it easier. The impression I think that people get is, he must have people doing this for him, you know? He must have people sorting this.
Like how I want to request you for a ride in your Lamborghini.
Exactly.
Dr. Abdul Nasser Al-Shali is UAE's ambassador to India. He's been in India for the last 1.5 years. But today's podcast was about extracting the culture of his country, the Gulf culture in general. Very, very fun conversation. Certain geopolitical angles were addressed. But I hope that you view today's episode as more of a cultural conversation because there's a lot for us to learn about the rest of the world. I enjoyed the heck out of speaking to him. And I hope that you enjoy this episode as much as I enjoyed recording it for you. And as much as I enjoyed speaking to a newfound friend, it's a very fun episode of TRS. It's Dr. Abdul Nasser coming at ya. Dr. Abdul Nasser, welcome to India. Welcome to TRS.
Thank you very much for having me.
I love talking to people from UAE who actually grown up in UAE, in my eyes, because I've traveled so much to UAE. I feel like y'all are very relaxed people to talk to.
Well, it was very difficult for me to live anywhere anyways because my mother wouldn't let me. So I think in this very specific case, it's different. I'm much older than before and she kind of had to let go. But yeah, I think we tend to be relaxed regardless of where we go.
Where does that relaxation come from? Is it a part of UAE culture?
I think so. And I think it's also part of living in a place that has been, that has developed with too many people from too many places, all in the same place. You get a lot of exposure to different cultures, different personalities, different characters. The pace of life could be real fast, depending on what you're doing in the UAE and where are you located. But for instance, I recently moved back to my hometown, Ajman, and it's the smallest emirate. And Ajman is a very quiet place to live in a very good way. So, you know, I can just walk to my mother's house where my grandmother also lives, walk back to my house, and life just almost stops, you know, in a good way, where you're not stressed, you're not worried about work, and you're in your own kind of cocoon, but again, in a very good way.
Tell me about your childhood and tell me from your eyes how UAE has changed since your childhood. Like, was it always like this? Because in the 8 years that I have known UAE, it's changed so much. So I can't imagine what it's changed like in the last 20, 30 years. What was your childhood like?
So I lived in Ajman, the emirate that I'm from, the smallest emirate from all seven. And there was a time when I don't think everyone would be able to believe this, but there were times when there will be blackouts, electricity blackouts. I remember this from my childhood because in the summer, there's too much demand on electricity. The country was growing too fast. It was very difficult to catch up with that.
This is the 80s, 90s?
This is the 90s, early 90s, I would say.
Gotcha.
But then, you know, I also saw when this was no longer an issue and, you know, you didn't need to worry about this. I moved different homes throughout my childhood. So I lived in quite a few places until I settled down with my mother and my sister and my grandmother in a single house. And from there, I I shifted to my workplace in Abu Dhabi. And then I was between the different Emirates because of changing circumstances in my personal life. And now I'm in India. So this has been a very summarized version of my childhood, but feel free to ask.
I mean, my actual underlying question here is also how locals from UAE look at, one, the growth that you guys have seen, because this would have happened in your lifetime. You would have seen all this infrastructure growth, growth of the population, you know, facilities, etc. And the second question is, how do you look at the individual Emirates? For example, if I had to say, you know, something positive about Delhi, I'd say great food, lot of friendship-based culture. If I had to say a positive about Mumbai, I'd say finance capital, you know, media. So how do you look at the different Emirates? But also, how do you just look at this whole story? Like, how is it from your eyes?
So Ajman developed a lot, but it developed at a time when I was already moving to a different Emirate. So it kind of took a bit longer than the other Emirates that people would naturally know about. I worked in Dubai initially, so I was privy to what was happening in Dubai, you know, because I was, you know, driving on the roads, going to different places, flying from the airport as well. So I could see how the roads were changing, the airport was expanding, there were flights added all the time, especially that I used to work for Emirates Airline as well. And you could see the pace. And then I moved to Abu Dhabi, and the feeling in Abu Dhabi was different because I was living close to where my workplace was, and the place was developed already. I'm talking here 2013. So, gotcha. The place was developed. It was already there. I think in the in proximity to where I stayed, the only place that was still to be constructed and finished was what we call Qasr al-Watan, where we host the presidential delegations, or for example, when the prime minister comes and so on. And then after living in Abu Dhabi for a few years and starting to go to the areas outside, you could see those major developments that not everyone pays attention to because you're not naturally living there or staying there. So if you're coming from Dubai, for instance, you will cross into a couple of islands. There is Yas and there is Saadiyat. Yas is the one with Ferrari World and Warner Brothers and the Sea World and whatnot. And then you go to Saadiyat, and that's where the Louvre is, and a couple of other museums are coming up, including the Abrahamic house. So in that sense, now going back to Ajman, just to have it all or bring it all to one full circle, Ajman has changed significantly to what I remember from my childhood. Even when I go back to the neighborhood where I used to live, it looks very different. The houses have changed. The roads have significantly improved. And then you go to the newer areas and you see that the development has been done even better than the previous areas and than how they did in the other areas, and so on and so forth. Dubai has changed in the sense that there are new neighborhoods that are being developed because the existing neighborhoods are getting overcrowded. So now you would see people choosing to live in areas that are a little bit further away, but they get a bit of quiet. They have everything around them in terms of community. So if you look at the pace, I think the closer you get to Dubai and Abu Dhabi, the pace has been faster than compared to the other Emirates.
How do you feel about the expats coming in? Like, there's so many countries which are mixing into your country. There are other countries which look at this as not a positive thing. I actually look at it as a positive thing. I think that's what a lot of Indians would also want, that, you know, have a mix of culture. But how do you look at it? How do local Emiratis look at it generally?
I like it. I would tend to believe that Emiratis also do like it because they have been seeing this for the longest time. And I'm not talking the past 10, 15 years. I'm talking about people who have built medical centers or small clinics or old churches in the UAE. Those also came from abroad. They were not, you know, Emiratis who have done those kind of things. And so there was this early exposure because of the way the UAE was formed, how the union came to being, and how it developed. The only thing that changed, I think, is that the number of nationalities coming in have increased significantly. Population has grown also significantly. And you get exposure to cultures that perhaps in the past 10 years you did not get exposure to because of the mix that is coming in and the mix that you get to see in the UAE.
I think it's a very fun place to stay because of this mix of culture.
Absolutely. I mean, if you were just living, and don't get me wrong here, it's when I go back to Ajman, for instance, you know, my neighborhood is all Emiratis. But it's also good and it feels nice to go out certain areas to dine or whatever and to see that people from other places are also enjoying your country and enjoying the cities and what the cities have to offer. Because I think this is an important measure of success. If you're living in your country, it's easy to find things to do. Hmm. But then how do you make sure that your cities develop in a way that make others look at your cities as successful places to be in, to live in, to work, and to even visit. And I think this is kind of what puts those cities on the map.
Yeah, fair. Do you have friends who own lions or tigers?
No.
Why is this stereotype a thing? Like,
I don't know. By the way, I don't feel happy seeing those videos. they make me feel uncomfortable because they have become a stereotype. But in my case, and now doing a quick check, no, I don't have any friends who own tigers and lions or any of those animals.
Any wild animals. Yeah. Where has this come from, Ben?
I don't know. Maybe it's human being nature. Like we started with domesticating certain animals and we think we are supposed to crack a new level now. I don't know. but you know, certain individuals, I think, have certain hobbies and interests.
Okay. With all the Arab countries, I've been to Qatar, I've been to UAE, and I felt like the culture was pretty similar. But how do you guys look at it differently? Is the culture of the other Arab countries similar to UAE? Why are there borders in the first place?
Well, borders because of how those countries have been formed. And I think you will understand being an Indian and we're here in Mumbai. So you get what I mean, right? Borders have been drawn by other countries and been set ages ago, before my time and your time. Yeah. And then those countries have been formed. So in our case, the UAE was seven Emirates and then they formed into what we call the United Arab Emirates. Similarities, absolutely, in quite a few things, whether it's the cuisine in certain ways or the way we talk.
Language. And,
but here's the thing. You said Arab countries, but then you have the GCC countries. So UAE, Qatar, Bahrain, Saudi, Oman, and Kuwait. And then you have Arab countries. So among the GCC, there are similarities, but there are also some differences. And then even within those countries, you would see that things also change in terms of the way people dress or they talk. So, for example, there's at least one dialect in the UAE that I could not understand. And that's a single country. So imagine how it is.
It's a dialect of Arabic?
It's a dialect of our language. But it's specific to a very specific tribe in the UAE. And so it's the way they talk and how fast it is that makes it difficult to comprehend unless you are from the tribe or you can understand the dialect in one way or the other. So that's why you would see that, yes, there are similarities. But for us living in those countries, we know the similarities and we acknowledge them, but we also know where the differences are. There is absolutely no doubt that I would not be able to understand all the words that they will be saying because there are words that are unique also to each and every country, as much as they wouldn't understand everything that we say in the Emirati dialect.
Can you tell from the accent that so-and-so's from Saudi or so-and-so's from...
Up to a certain extent, yes.
Yeah?
But for example, in some of those countries, whether they are from the north or the south or whatnot, this could be difficult to tell. I think only nationals of those countries can differentiate. Among the countries, yes, you can.
Okay. Is there any chapter of history that you've learned through adult life that you'd like to teach Emirati children?
chapter of history, understanding where the UAE stands when it comes to various political issues and ample interest in the diplomatic academy and people applying, because I was looking, I was doing this for 3 years. I was handling all applicants and interviewing them and filtering the people going into the ministry, so on and so forth. And people are very interested because they see how active the UAE is. But then if the interest today is X, imagine how big it's going to be if you actually teach some of that in your curriculum. It's going to be 10x, 100x, 1000x, because they understand that this is important. This is why we do certain things the way we do them. And we want to be part of that.
Yeah. I do have some geopolitical input from the India side. Like, the one thing I've learned after talking to Dr. Jaishankar on the show and all these geopolitical experts we've had on this show is that if the government or a cabinet minister, someone of power, makes a certain statement which is related to foreign relations, every word in that statement matters a lot. And we had PM Modi saying that UAE is like a brother. I think that matters a lot in terms of how India views UAE. And knowing how UAE culture is, the one thing I know about a lot of people in UAE is that if you open up your heart with a sense of brotherhood, you'll get 10x more brotherhood from the other side.
That's very true. And since you mentioned, you know, every word means a lot, one of the biggest fights, if you can call it a fight, whenever a joint statement is issued between any two countries is, this word should be removed, we should change this word, we should move this word to another sentence, paragraph. And I have done this quite a lot. My career, and trust me, every single word matters. And so yes, I get what they're talking about. You mentioned brother, and yes, I get now a lot of comments, especially after the most recent two visits. People just saying good luck, brother, or best of luck, brother, or well done, brother, for example, on the marathon and so on. So it kind of also trickled down to everyone, and now everyone sees it the same way. I know that a couple of my colleagues from the embassy also, they get called that by their counterparts here. So
yeah, that's a great response, brother.
Good one.
No, but I'll tell you on a very practical level what this is for a lot of Indians. So whenever I'm in UAE, I have a friend there who's got a Nepali guy who works in his kitchen and an Indian guy who works as his driver. And the Indian guy is supporting him. I mean, both the guys are supporting their families as well as their kids' dreams through living in Dubai and earning in dirhams, which matters a lot for the average Indian, Nepali, Pakistani, Sri Lanka, in terms of they just have higher income opportunities. That's a very base level understanding of the geopolitical relations that a lot of Indians understand between UAE and India. That a lot of people find work there and are able to actually fulfill the dreams of their families. I think that's how a lot of the masses look at UAE specifically.
In a sense, we outsource employment.
Yes.
So, you know, we have an X number of jobs and all sorts of nationalities could come and be employed in those sectors and be able to provide for their families. And this is why you have to also keep in mind that the way we look at all of those people coming in and working in the UAE as part of the journey, you know, part of how the UAE has come about, part of why the UAE is where it is today, regardless of which sector you work in.
Yeah.
That's why it's important.
I gave their example because I want to also talk about the common denominator and then go up to all these real estate billionaires that we see who've come out of India and Pakistan but built their careers in UAE. So there's a whole spectrum of people who found their careers in your country. So my question is, over the next 10 to 20 years, how do you guys look at the trajectory of all these people, plus say people like myself, who I have a stable base in India, but there is a strong part of me that wishes to shift to UAE or at least have a base there. Is that something you guys are looking for? Do you all want to attract more people, or is the population just increased too much?
There is always an appetite to attract talent. And I think if you look at the UAE in the past few years, the laws and regulations that have come out have focused on that. So yes, we do attract people from all nationalities to come and work in all kinds of sectors. But you could see that the spectrum has been widened now. And you get physicians with very specific specializations. You get people with talent. You get content creators. You get entrepreneurs and all sorts of people wanting to come and operate in the UAE because the regulatory and other things, the ecosystem all together supports that kind of thing. So the way you should look at it is, as the country develops, the talent that we want to attract are also being diversified and becoming, you know, not different, but the spectrum has been widened. It's a larger pool, and we want to make sure that the UAE is the place for those talents to come and, you know, to establish a second base or their main base or whatnot, to be able to expand and to do business.
Other than citizenship, every Indian knows the word golden visa. But for the ones that don't, could you explain what a golden visa is?
So it's residency. And it's good to have because it makes your life easier. Even when you get the national ID, which in your case, it's the Aadhaar.
Is it Aadhaar card, yeah.
The Aadhaar card. Yes. So we have something similar. And if you're a golden visa holder, it actually shows on the card, it shows when you register for any kind of government service. All of this factors in. So it makes your life much easier, your residency much easier. And you don't have to worry about, you know, getting the visa or the e-visa expiring and so on and so forth.
How does one qualify better to get it?
Being talented.
Be of value.
And you're going to add value to the UAE and add value to the UAE economy. We have all sorts of categories and quite a few of them focus on content creators, people with very specific talents coming to the UAE and contributing to its growth, which also means that having a golden visa doesn't mean that you are necessarily shifting countries.
Yeah.
It just means that you can operate easier in the UAE wherever you are, whether you're an Indian in India or you are from some other nationality elsewhere.
Yeah. As a content creator, I love coming to your country for that reason, that every place you go to is very content creation friendly, which I don't know if the average person understands can be a big problem for us in India. Things as simple as if we take out our camera in a public place, sometimes police will come and stop us. And I've been doing YouTube for like 9 years of my life, but I never have that problem in UAE. Like I can shoot anywhere almost, as long as I'm not troubling other people. Etc. Etc.
That's very true, and I think because in the UAE the system allows for not pre-checks, but if you were someone who was carrying something other than a camera, security wise, that would have been caught way back, right? So if you are in downtown and you want to take shots of the Burj, or as long as they are not certain installations where it's forbidden and not allowed to shoot, then, you know, feel free to do so. Even with drone flying, by the way, as long as you get a permit and you are flying within a certain range, then you're totally fine to do so.
Yeah, it's very, very content creator friendly because all we're looking for is ease of work and great backgrounds, since you guys have both.
Yeah.
But what I actually also want to ask you is the security thing, because, you know, I have a lot of friends from other countries who are now staying in Dubai, Abu Dhabi, and their biggest reason for staying, the girls especially, they say that they've never been to a safer place than this. They've never lived in a place that's safer than this. So my actual question is, in the background, what has the government done to make it that safe? Do you read Yuval Noah Harari?
Yes.
He has a whole chapter on law and how laws came about for human beings. Like, what was the need to create laws for humans? It was because there was probably some ancient human who committed the first crime, and because of crime, they realized, oh, laws are needed in the first place and security is needed. So when you look at things that primarily, now you're running a country, you want to ensure that whole geographical landmass is safe. I don't know too many countries which have ensured that the whole geographical landmass is almost free of crime. So what has gone on in the background to make it that safe?
Well, establishing the laws and making sure that there is law and order is the first step. But then re-emphasizing those laws, and then the culture re-emphasizing the importance of adhering to those laws. And then within those laws, there are obviously fines and all kinds of penalties that you could be exposed to if you break the law and whatnot. And that kind of becomes a re-emphasizing kind of cycle, you know, like it just keeps re-emphasizing certain values that the law have established maybe at first, that the culture has also introduced at a certain point. And then all of this makes you also feel like, yeah, I shouldn't be throwing anything out of the window of the car, not because I might get a fine, but no one else is doing it. So I'd be, you know, like I'd be the black point in all of this. To give you another example, personal example, I drive a lot on the highway, and some time ago they introduced a penalty if you use your phone while driving. Okay, and I have self-drive in the car, so technically I'm not driving, right? But if I do hold my phone, it's a hefty fine with black points, which after accumulating for X number of fines, I could lose my driving license.
How much is the fine?
It's 800 dirhams, which
17,000 rupees, roughly 16,000.
Yeah, so it's quite a fine. So imagine if you get, and each one of those carries 4 black points, you need 24 to lose your license. Is it 4? It's 4 or 6, I'm not sure. But
it's very strong systems built in.
Exactly. And this is not basically a policeman or a police car, catching you on the highway. It's the cameras.
Was it like this in your childhood as well? Like,
no.
It was not as safe as it is now?
Not in terms of safety. I'm referring to this traffic road system, etc.
I'm saying crime in general.
I used to hear about things happening in the past, but the usual things, you know, someone stealing something from someone's house, that kind of thing. We have had incidents. Very few, very rare, every now and then. But then every time something happens, something changes afterwards. And we missed this. Or for example, we should have covered this earlier. And then you improve it and then nothing afterwards happened. So I think it's also that, okay, if you have laws and you have regulations and those are 30 years old and they don't really fit what you're trying to do now, it's not going to work.
If, hypothetically speaking, you could take a foreigner to only one place in your whole country.
One place?
What is the place you choose? Just one place.
I'll take them to my place.
Because
the makes it easier, right? And then I can serve them Emirati cuisine, food, etc. The neighborhood is nice, walking around and whatnot. And it's also hospitality, right?
Like, yeah,
it's proper hospitality.
It's a big part of being in UAE.
We are in your house as well, so it's kind of the same thing.
How long have you been in India now?
A year and 3 months.
What's your favorite food that you've had here? Like, what's the best thing you've eaten here?
Shahi tukra. I found out about it accidentally when I was trying Old Delhi food. And when I tried it, I had a second or a third serving afterwards. And then they told me what it is. And then every time I go somewhere, I ask for it. And not everyone gets it the same way as Old Delhi does.
Right.
But to me, I was like, why have I been eating the wrong Indian desserts all my life? I had to come to India to get to know, you know, what a really good dessert is.
Yeah. You're in Delhi? Like, you're based out of Delhi?
I'm based out of Delhi.
Which is the food capital of our country.
Is it?
Yeah. I think you get like the best food in India and Delhi.
My biggest challenge with my senior officials whenever they come is they always go for one restaurant without naming the restaurant.
Everyone knows which restaurant.
Yeah, but we don't want to do a free advertising here.
It's okay. I'm okay with it.
It's up to you.
It's Bukhara, ITC, Maurya, I think. It's the one restaurant that every human in Delhi wants to go
exactly,
to.
Exactly. And, you know, I've been there for quite some time, right? So I've tried other restaurants. I have been trying super hard to get people to try them as well. So I tried with my foreign minister. I think he couldn't because of the G20, etc. But I'm sure he would whenever he comes in next. So one of the other ministers came, and I used to work with this minister for almost 4 years before I came to Delhi. And I told him, I have to take you to this place. He's like, yeah, absolutely. So we go there, and that restaurant has like 6 appetizer courses. And I think you know what I'm talking about.
Tasting menu. Like you get the whole...
You get the whole thing. And then like 2-3 main courses, and then like pre-dessert, and then the dessert. And you know, 3 courses, I think, into it, he started snapping pictures and sending them to the foreign minister. I was like, this food is good. Just go and try it. So it was that kind of shift that I'm trying also to...
Do you find some similarities between Indian food and Arab food?
A lot. Many people talk to me about biryani. I tell them, listen, I've had so much biryani growing up that I kind of don't want to have biryani in India. I want to eat the other things. But that's the thing, right? Because they cook it at home. You go to other restaurants and you also get biryani in restaurants. And so you would have it everywhere. Samosa is also everywhere. Yesterday, I partly cooked or participated in preparing a dish, which the chef surprised me with, because it's a very Marathi dish, but some of the ingredients could also fit into another Indian dish. Now I can't recall the name, but it's surprising to see how the similarities work, even with gulab jamun, for example, because we have something similar. It's called ligemat. I'm sure once you're in the UAE, I'll make sure you try them. Yeah. Another chef was telling me today that this specific thing is very similar. The only thing is that we let gulab jamun soak in a lot of syrup, so it becomes more dense and the texture is very different. But the ingredients are the same. Mm. The halva as well. Mm. We have something similar from the UAE culinary scene. So quite a bit, but you have to try them and be like, oh, this is similar to this and this is similar to that. Even one dish that is... kind of almost always served in Ramadan, which is coming up in a couple of months, the halim.
Yeah, of course, halim.
So it's similar to it as well. So you know, like, there are quite a few of them.
Have you had galati kebab?
Yes, in UP.
Do you like it?
I love galati kebab. I was there for some visit was... one of the a shopping mall anniversary as well, and they served it, and I fell so in love with it that I started checking whenever I go to a restaurant whether they have it or not. And then I was somewhere else in Dubai. It was one medical center, and then I think the nurse was Indian, and she's like, there's a very good galati kebab place in Dubai. I'm like, where? And then she told me the name of the restaurant. It says it's the old part of Dubai, which tourists don't always venture into. And, you know, you look at it's a very normal restaurant. You go in and the kebab is really good.
Is it that gold souk? It's in that gold souk?
It would be in that kind of area, yes. Because there are a few areas around the gold souk, and it's one of them.
I have found out after visiting UAE that much that Shah Rukh Khan is very big in UAE.
Like, he is.
He's also in UAE a lot, but I've seen that he has a lot of Emirati fans as well. So how did this happen? Like, did they air his movies in the 90s and 2000s? Because that's the reason he's that big in India. He had a lot of hit movies which were shown on TV.
That's exactly that. No, that's true. I grew up watching Indian movies.
Yeah?
Yeah. So I have known the actors from a very early age. And then, you know, I got disconnected or detached because of many things changing in my life. And now when I came back to, when I came to India, I went back to watching Indian movies, the new ones coming out. So especially because I'm living here, and then when a new movie is out, and if it's a little bit controversial, then you'd be like, okay, well, I know what this is about. Mm. Or if it's something that everyone's talking about, be like, yeah, I want to watch this as well.
I know which movie you're talking about. So we all know which movie you're talking about.
But it's the kind of thing now where I have this habit of watching almost every single new movie coming out. Not all of them, most of them. And it's a habit that I have maintained for 16, 17 years in a row. Every weekend with the same couple of guys, we go to the movies in the same shopping mall in Dubai and we watch a movie. And if we give up on all good movies, then we go have dinner. So the only thing that have changed now is that there would be a couple of indie movies that I'll watch as well. So it's that influence that being here has on me now.
What was your favorite Hindi movie from your childhood?
I don't remember the name of the movie. It was an Amir Khan movie. I remember there was a song where he says, "I love you, daddy."
I mean, did the song go like, "Oh, I love you, daddy"?
Yes, that's the song from the movie.
Okay, fair. Do you remember any other movies? Or even recently, not from your childhood. Like, what Bollywood movies do you remember? Is there anyone you remember?
I've watched a couple of them. I've watched a movie where a girl gets lost and she was watching a cricket game, and that's how she knew she was from another country.
Bajrangi Bhaijaan.
I think so.
She's a Pakistani girl who gets lost, yes, in India, and Salman Khan takes her back.
Yes. And then I also watched a couple of Shah Rukh Khan's latest movies that came out.
Jawan and Pathan. Those are the two recent,
yes,
ones.
Yes.
God. What do you make of Hindi films now when you see it now? Like, from your eyes, what is it?
There are similarities to what I remember from my childhood. The stories have changed. The messaging in the movies have changed. And I think living in India also makes you better understand where those are coming from, or what are they trying to say in those movies. And it's good because for you to be able to do what you're doing, you need to hear about this or listen to multiple individuals in different industries saying what they got to say to form an opinion on, yeah, on certain matters. So whatever is coming out of Bollywood or any other filmmaking industry or any other content creation kind of informs that.
You're saying like whatever's happening in culture is represented through cinema or content.
That's how always people communicated, right? They either go into a political party and try to voice their opinion and get elected, or they communicate those messages through other forms and mediums.
Yeah. When I was doing research for this episode, I found out that PM Modi was the first Indian PM since Indira Gandhi who visited the UAE. Which I found strange because UAE has such a big Indian population as well. As in people of Indian origin who have shifted since the 80s, the 90s, the 2000s. So me, my question to you is, how does the local Emirati view PM Modi? I'm asking you like the foreigner's perspective on PM Modi.
I'll tell you. So I was there when we were preparing for his first visit. And I could see the euphoria because it kind of was that everyone saw that this will generate momentum that will be unstoppable.
For the ties between the two countries.
For the ties between the two countries. And so if you look back to that time and today, you would see that it's not just the relationship. I mean, let's take the relationship for now and box it for a while and look at the relationship between the two leaders. And that has a very special kind of charisma. There's a very special bond between them, which also trickled down to the relationship itself and drove it much further than it would have been otherwise. And I think this is why the perception of the PM in the UAE is extremely positive, especially with all those visits between the two countries. The PM visiting a few times, my president also visiting India a few times, especially recently.
Yeah. I think, at least in India, the local population's perception of UAE has improved in my eyes. That's what I feel. I'm talking about like the masses.
True. Because they see that, right? I mean, once you have a leader visiting the other country, it makes headlines. And then you see it the other way around, it makes headlines. And then you see quite a few high-level visits in a very short period of time. I'd be like, okay, this is way too important for them to not be visiting this frequently. And then every single time there is a visit happening, you would see that a few things happen pre-visit, during the visit, and after the visit. And if it's not signing MOUs or inaugurating this or starting negotiations on that, then it's something else, a major project being announced or participating in a cultural event or hosting this kind of event and so on. And I think once you see that, it becomes extremely difficult not to be in, I wouldn't say be in favor, but to be a true fan of the relationship, to be a true fan of the other country, to actually like the other country, and, you know, to be excited about the relationship. Yeah.
Familiarity increases in many ways.
I think familiarity has always been there. But this happening over the past years kind of just drove it to a very different level.
Gotcha. Again, I'm giving you some Indian guy perspective here.
Sure.
This is about His Highness Mohammed bin Zayed and His Highness Mohammed bin Rashid. These two people. My impression of them as an Indian, especially when I go to Dubai, is these two human beings are very visionary human beings. I think they see the end point and then they are highly organized in their own head to be able to execute upon that vision. It's a very rudimentary viewpoint that I have in my heart about these two humans. So my question to you is, what is your viewpoint, your human viewpoint on PM Modi as an Emirati? Like, how do you view PM Modi?
I like him. Me being an Emirati, even before coming to India, because as I said, you know, I've been part of the first visit. I saw how things have developed. I saw how things have taken a very different direction. And honestly speaking, this relationship needed that, because you look at India and you look at the UAE, being an Indian or being an Emirati, and we are 3 and a half hours away, depending on from what city to what city. We have a sizable Indian population living in the UAE in all kinds of sectors and industries. And it just did not make sense that back then there was this...
distance.
Yes. Like, it was too quiet. You know, like, why isn't anything happening in this relationship? Why is it weird? Like, what was happening there? And then PM Modi comes and this takes a very different trajectory, a very different direction. And then, you know, the relationship between the two leaders also took the relationship to an even better direction. And so you cannot not see this and think, you know, it's because of those two leaders that we are where we are here today. And it only makes sense because, I mean, again, you look at the UAE's population, we're talking about 1/3 of the population being Indian. And so it's only a natural progression in the relationship that we are where we are. And I think we're just starting.
Why didn't it happen earlier?
Sometimes there have to be certain, or maybe not an example, and it's more of an illustration. Certain circumstances, certain individuals need to be in certain places at the right time for things to work out.
Like, there's too many factors at play.
True. And so if you were looking at the institutions, yeah, the institutions will be doing what they're doing. They will meet every year. We will have conversations. We will sign maybe an agreement, maybe two agreements. A couple of UAE companies would come and invest here. A couple of Indians would come and move to the UAE and expand their business to the UAE. But that doesn't mean that the relationship is where it's supposed to be. But then when everything is aligned for things to work out, and you have two leaders who can take advantage of this and make sure that we are, you know, using this opportunity to the best of everyone, for the best of everyone, then that's how it works.
Gotcha. Do you get attacked in interviews?
There was one interview where I think I was doing like 3-4 interviews a day. And in one interview, there was one question after the other. And each one of them becomes more controversial and in a way, very
restrictive, like they push you in a corner.
Very aggressive. Mm. We had to, that was the one interview that we did not finish. Even though I'm very flexible when it comes to interviews. But it happens. Every now and then it happens because sometimes I think people think they won't get another FaceTime with you, even though it should be the other way around. Like,
yeah,
make it seem okay and we'll meet again.
As someone who conducts interviews for a living, my main priority is that at the end of this experience, if my guest is pissed off with me, then I failed at my job. Like, the guest should take away a good experience and come back, or at least want to come back.
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
I don't understand why interviewers would give their guest a bitter experience. You know, why would you want to give someone a bitter memory just for the sake of your one headline, your one like controversy?
But then that's it.
You'll never meet them again.
Yeah. I mean, if had you known me 10 years ago, it was very difficult to seem approachable until you get to know me. Then once you get to know me, it becomes okay. You know, you understand where I come from, why I do certain things, why I say certain things. But then as my career progressed and I became in charge of people, I wouldn't say broke in me, it just, something shifted significantly. And that sense of empathy grew in a sense where I got attacked for being too empathetic.
For being too nice.
For being too nice.
Stop being Mr. Good Guy.
Exactly. And you know, like it was just natural progression because you're in charge of people, you're in charge of their livelihoods. So what happens in their homes and what happens in their personal lives, even though you have nothing to do with it or to do with them, would affect you in one way or the other. And so you learn to sympathize with them, see how you can sort them out. And then I was put in a position where I was in charge of a significant number of careers where, so I was chairing the HR committee for all diplomats, which means promotions, recruitment, transfers into the UAE, transfers abroad. And half of my time was people walking into my office and telling me, you know, this thing happened, that thing happened. This person told us this. This manager doesn't want us around. They moved me to this country, but I can't move now because my family is facing certain issues. And I needed to understand, you know. And so I was listening to a lot of people. And then it does two things to you. One, that sense of empathy grows significantly in you. Because how could you relate to people if you don't understand where they're coming from? And number two is that it also makes you appreciate what you have in life, in a sense. Because when you think, you know, they should have gave me that increment. They didn't give me that increment. And then you get someone who walks in and tells you, I haven't had an increment for X number of years. I'd be like, oh. So, you know, everything is relative to something else. And you have to see things in that context to be able to appreciate what you have.
Yeah. Now, here's what I've learned about Emirates, okay?
Okay.
And it's based on when I visited 8 years ago and when I visited now. I felt a difference not because of the Emirates, but because of me.
Okay.
Okay. So I feel all of y'all in your core are very loving. Like, there's a lot of love and like niceness. But back when I visited then, I felt like the ice was a little intense to break. And I'd never tried having a conversation. Now when I go, I have conversations all the time because I've understood you guys more. Again, empathy increased.
Okay.
I understood your core much more. So I feel you guys are very hospitable. You'll want to help people party, etc. As in, you'll want to give people a nice time. That's what the energy I've got. But it takes some time for that ice to break. And I'm only taking this liberty with you because I've spoken to you for like an hour now. So you know I'm not coming from a bad place. But where does that culture of little private energy come from? Like, you know, you guys are private up to a point and then there's an explosion of love.
But I think it's something similar between our cultures, by the way.
In India also?
Yeah, because when I deal with people from different states, even at work, they are very... held back, you know, because, oh, he's the ambassador, you know, we can't say everything, we can't share everything, we need to be careful and whatnot. But it's not that way because, I mean, back home, for example, in the other departments, we would do outings, and we would go do workouts together, and go on road trips together, and so on. And that takes a while. That takes some time to break. You know, there was this a video that went viral a while ago, and it was of His Highness the President of the UAE. I think you'll know why I'm saying this after I say it. He was going around a certain neighborhood, checking out a new, I think, housing development. And he went to an Emirati house, and he was served Arabic coffee. And on his way out, there was, if I'm not mistaken, an Indian who was taking a video, a picture of His Highness. And he called him to come and actually take the picture with him. And so, why am I saying this? Is because this helps generally, that, you know, you see that this is how we are as Emiratis. This is our culture, and when you see it being done by your leaders, it just re-emphasizes those values and those norms and makes it easier.
Have you noticed that I'm trying to bring that out more through this conversation as well?
Yes,
like I'm trying to humanize you more.
Yes.
Because I do feel, I think it's something, you know, because I'm Indian and I love my country so much, I'm going to take the liberty of saying one negative about our culture, which is that I think a lot of us, not all of us, a lot of us can be judgmental. So the judgment with people like yourself, Emiratis, like when you're dressed like this, is that those guys are too rich for me.
I get what you're saying. I get what you're saying. But yeah, you know, I was... when I told I was coming to India, you will like the story. When okay, let's take this another. Let me start from the beginning.
Sure.
I was doing so much work back home that it never occurred to me that I'm going to get posted. And I have asked to be posted like 6 years ago as a diplomat, and you know the answer was no. We wanted to do something different. So I was like, okay, maybe they don't want me to be posted abroad. Maybe I'll just continue working in HQ, because I was there handling every single country in the globe. Economic relations, trade relations, handling the food security file and all of those multinational organizations and whatnot. So it just didn't occur to me. And so when I was told, my reaction was like, why? I didn't understand. And it had nothing to do with the country. It was just, why are you moving me abroad? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we started talking about it. And one of the comments that I got was, you need to be more social. You need to engage with everyone. You need to interact with everyone. And true. I mean, if I look at how I have been before I came to India, I was very selectively social, you know, like I would just... spend time with certain people who I'm okay spending time with and wouldn't drain my energy, and I'll feel okay afterwards and whatnot. And then, you know, you have to go to weddings and you have to participate in certain activities and events. I'm like, if you want me to dance in those weddings, I'll dance in those weddings, which is probably why there's a video of me on Instagram with me dancing. But, but you know, it was, I think that kind of, that was something also missing in me as a person, that I need to engage with everyone, get to know everyone. And this is why I told you, I would ask every single person I meet back home, where are you from? And if he's Indian, which state are you from? Because I do want to know Indians in the UAE and Indians in India. So that's number one. Number two is, this experience career-wise is very different, because what I used to do before is I interact mostly with Emiratis. Now I interact mostly with Indians.
What do you make of us, generally speaking?
You are very different all across India.
Too subjective.
No, you can be both objective and subjective.
No, I meant like everyone is extremely different.
That's true.
Variety is too much.
Yes, and so... what certain individuals would be okay with, other individuals would not be okay with. And you need to understand the background and the culture and what each state stands for and who's not okay with who. And try to just, you know, it's obviously difficult because India is vast And it's not the easy thing to do, especially if you travel a lot into those different states. But it's also part of why doing what I'm doing is actually fun. Because not a single day is the same like the day before it. As a diplomat, I'm supposed to meet my counterparts, but I also tend to enjoy a lot interactions like this or other engagements, visiting places, meeting people from different backgrounds, different sectors. It gives you a very different perspective on everything that is India related.
Yeah. Again, you know, so this is something I picked up from Dr. Jaishankar. Have you heard of Vasudev Kutumbakam? So it's the kind of catchphrase. I'm okay. using a very informal word, but it's the mandate from our foreign ministry that first and foremost, look at the world as one family.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's about having better relations with the rest of the world. I think there's a very pure message there, which is the actual representation of Indian culture. Like in the way that I understand it, if I meet someone from UAE, someone from Brazil, someone from Europe, my first instinct is, hey, interesting human. I want to get to know and I want to give them positive energy.
Right.
Okay. The issue is that even if you speak about our history, a lot of the colonizers colonized us by using divide and rule, which is like causing fights between the Indians and then utilizing. Same thing happened.
I mean, maybe in the region overall. It's a typical tactic anyways.
Yeah. So I think for some reason, see, Indians are very emotional.
We're also very emotional.
Yeah.
So you see another similarity.
I think my main intention with this episode is for people to familiarize themselves with generally the Arab world. That's my actual core intention here. So there's a lot of people who'll watch this and all their preconceived notions about Arab people, I want that to break. Which is something you only learn when you actually travel or when you listen to podcasts like this.
Yeah.
So I think for me, the core of this podcast is getting people introduced to Emiratis.
Yeah.
What would you like to say to the Indians who are experiencing an Arab human being for the first time?
Despite what you think of me wearing what I'm wearing and, you know, being the ambassador of a GCC country, the UAE, here, I'm just, I do the normal things. You know, I have
Gulati kebab.
I have Gulati kebab. I love food, so you know, I tend to go and try all kinds of dishes. I venture out wherever I am, back home and here. Except that now I'm also getting to know the Indian Westerns also back in the UAE. I recently moved into a house that I have been constructing for the past 5 years. And, you know, the usual issues, you know, this thing is leaking and that thing needs to be fixed and this needs to be sorted out. So it's not like I have people to do this for me. I have to do it on my own. I think for the longest time, anyways, I thought if you want to do something, do it yourself. But you know, the impression I think that people get is he must have people doing this for him. You know, he must have people sorting this
like how
for him.
I want to request you for a ride in your Lamborghini.
Exactly.
It's a joke. Don't mind.
I drive my own car. So you know, it's and. Like I would be like very specifically, I would need to find places to charge my car because it's electric. And if I ran out of charge in the middle of nowhere, no one's going to come and help me. And it's that kind of thing, you know? So it's the notion, I think, even the earlier example of owning wild animals or knowing people who own wild animals or thinking that someone is just super rich because they were a certain outfit or because they come from a certain background is not necessarily true. You know, if you're doing a certain thing and you're good at it, yes, you will get there. But that's with merit and effort, not because you're born this way.
No, fair.
Yeah.
I feel this is only the first of many conversations we're going to have over the years. So Thank you, good sir. Had a very, very nice time talking to you.
Likewise.
And, you know, usually at the end of a podcast, I compliment my guest. With you, I'm going to save the compliment for the next episode.
Okay.
I feel like there's more conversations. There's a lot of stuff I have to talk to you offline as well.
With pleasure.
It was a lot of fun talking to you. That's what I'll tell you. Like, I had too much fun. I felt like I'm just talking to a brother, which says a lot about you, because actually the work you're doing, I mean, you're the ambassador of UAE to India. So it's almost disrespectful of me to call you a brother, but that's what I really felt with you. And that's my biggest way of serving respect.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you.
It was fun.
Lots of love. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Lots of love, sir.
Thank you.
I may not have covered everything that I wish to cover on today's episode. So he's going to be back on the show. Please tell me in the comment section what else you would have liked me to address in this particular podcast. I'm sure he's going to be scanning the comment section as well. I love hosting non-Indians on this Indian podcast, because I personally feel that there's a lot you gain through travel. And if you've not reached that point in your life where you can afford to travel abroad, then this podcast could be a very good means to understand how the rest of the world thinks, how the rest of the world strategizes, and how the rest of the world processes conversations with India and Indians. I hope you gained from today's episode. I gained a newfound friend as well as a lot of cultural wisdom. Lots of love to you guys. Thank you so much for supporting. Lots more coming at you in the coming few weeks. Stay tuned for some more geopolitical conversations, some more cultural conversations, and lots more knowledge on TRS.